This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. If you wander into the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, you will encounter several photography exhibits, meeting spaces, an auditorium, a few libraries, and many lively conversations. Wander further into the building, look behind some of the closed doors, and you will find the unexpected. Workshops on all kinds of things, from food to literacy through photography, to the connection between intellectual property and storytelling. John Bewin is the center's audio program director. He's been a correspondent for NPR and the American Radio Works, and he teaches an audio institute most semesters at CDS. We've asked him to come with us to share some of his work and the work of his students with us today. So today is the first in a series of visits from John Bewin and members of the staff of the Center for Documentary Studies. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be here.
Tell us about the assignment this past semester.
Now, this is a Duke undergraduate course, and a small group of students, six or seven students, and basically the assignment was to connect with a member of the Duke University support staff, people who earn a bi-weekly paycheck doing things like housekeeping, food service, receptionist, maintenance, those kinds of jobs, and to produce an audio portrait profile of that person to take us into their work life at Duke, but also in collaboration with this person, help tell us a story, a little bit of the story of this person's life and their family life here in Durham, things of that kind.
You have brought a couple of your students. Annie Fleischman is with us today, and we're going to talk with her. Let's start with Annie. Annie, first of all, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
You have brought with you an excerpt from your piece, and this is about a man named D.C. Williams. Tell us just a little bit about him.
D.C. Williams, his full name was Ronald D.C. Williams. He worked as the janitor for Cameron Indoor Stadium for about 16 years, from 89 to 2005. He passed away in June of 2005 from liver cancer, but while he was at Duke, he basically met everybody, he knows everyone in the basketball program. And
all right, well, let's hear a little clip of tape.
Well, I'm Mike Krzyzewski, the head basketball coach at Duke University. I've been here for 26 years. He had charisma, and he's a good guy, and he was smart. He had pride. He made us better. I would want him on my team anywhere.
Coach K isn't talking about J.J. Redick or Grant Hill. He's talking about a janitor. He's talking about Ronald D.C. Williams.
I want to make sure that they recognize this is Duke Flow. This is Coach K's court. And I'm the man who can keep it clean. Me.
Annie Fleischman's piece on D.C. Williams, the late D.C. Williams, janitor at Cameron. Why did you choose him?
You know, I just kind of had a hunch that maybe someone had worked at Cameron for a really long time. And when I went to investigate, I met so many people, and they told me, well, there was this amazing person, but unfortunately he passed away. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I was like, you know what, I want to do it anyway. I think that this was a really neat opportunity, and it's interesting to create a profile of someone when you can't talk to that person.
Tell us, John Bewin, a little bit about the genesis of the project. Where do you get the idea to talk with people behind the scenes?
Oh, that's interesting. I knew you were going to ask me that, and I was trying to remember.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it might have been inspired from somewhere back in the mind. There's a wonderful book of photography and oral history called Harvard Works Because We Do, which was done by actually former Harvard students, and it was part of also a labor organizing effort that was at Harvard, and an effort to sort of honor and to bring more respect to the people who work at a university in relatively lower paid jobs and often just are not recognized. And we used that book in the course, and we spent quite a bit of time in the first few weeks also talking about some of the issues that have come out for other reasons more recently,
sure,
about race and class and privilege and this sort of divide between, to what extent is there a divide between relatively privileged students and the people who work at the university in kind of blue-collar jobs.
Annie, did you find that that was something people wanted to talk about once that you began the project before the Duke lacrosse controversy, the story, you know, emerged? Once you were underway, did you find that that was something people wanted to talk about?
I think especially with my piece, it was kind of a glowing portrait of someone who was a service employee. I think people were falling all over themselves, really, to talk to me about him. And, you know, I mean, I just sent emails and I got basketball players to appear on my documentary, and people made time to do it. I mean, Coach K made time to do it because this person meant so much to him. And he said to me after I interviewed him, actually, that, you know, it's really good that someone's doing a piece like this, especially in the midst of what's going on with lacrosse. You can see that there are good relationships with service employees at Duke.
Well, one of the things that comes out in all of this, too, is the complexity and the nuance in a relationship between a huge institution like Duke and a complex city like Durham. We have another of John's students here. Bria Dolnick is with us. So, Bria, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Good to have you here. Now, your piece, while, you know, we have, Annie had the luxury of focusing on a guy who everybody liked and, you know, was able to talk about. You did a piece about a guy who got fired. Tell us a little bit about Johnny.
Johnny Hudson was also a housekeeper at Duke University, also in Cameron, actually, in the athletic department. Huh. And he worked there for 3 months, and there's a probationary period at Duke of 90 days after you've been hired on full-time. And Johnny was hired and then fired 10 days before the probationary period was over. And so this is a story exploring sort of why he was fired and whether or not that was a just firing and whether the probationary period is really a very fair policy.
I mean, you did interview him. Let's hear a little bit of that right now.
You may work in an office building, and you go home and you come in and you do your job, and you go home at 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and when you come back in the next day, your trash can is empty, your floor is vacuumed, your bathroom is clean. It just didn't happen by the blink of an eye. Somebody went in there and wiped and rubbed and mopped and scrubbed and did that. You know, it felt like it was like you wasn't human. You're not human, because if they expect you to cram 15 hours into 8 hours of work, it's impossible. That means that I would have to be in two and three places at one time, and it's impossible.
Johnny Hudson, part of a story done by Bria Dolnick for the Center for Documentary Studies, an undergraduate at Duke. Do you see this story as a story about vulnerability of workers at Johnny's level?
Mm-hmm. As I was finding out more and more about his case, I found, well, first of all, there's a group called Duke Organizing that's working with a lot of employees at Duke to get better relationships with them. And through starting to work with them, I found out about a couple of cases of housekeepers who were fired right before the end of their probationary period. And during that time, they're not protected by the union. So if they get fired, there's really no recourse. The university says it has a policy, but it's not defined. And so there's very little you can do without public pressure from the university or from the students of the university, which is what Duke Organizing is trying to help with. But it puts people in a very vulnerable position, especially because it's a $10 an hour job. So having this 3 month period where you can be fired at any time, and when people are fired, they can be fired for anything without any recourse.
The university did, though, give a reason. They said he wasn't doing his job, and then he took a key and all of that. Now, as a documentarian, do you investigate that side of the story?
Right, yes, I did. And, I mean, in my opinion, I think that the reasons were not very well-founded, and so I sort of explore that in the documentary and show this man as a whole person. There wasn't much of a chance for Johnny to prove himself either, which is the whole problem. There is no process to appeal this, and because you're a vulnerable and low on the totem poll employee, people don't really have to listen to you.
Let me ask you about the process of doing this, because on the one hand, you know, you've chosen to highlight and spotlight people who we don't normally think about, and that gives, in a sense, voice to people who are voiceless, and we hear them for the first time. On the other hand, then there's this really hard work of going and getting the documentation and understanding about a process, how it worked, then the details of that particular process and getting all that done. Do you see these almost as two separate animals when you put something like this together?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to get to know a person. First, you have an idea for a story, but that's very different from getting really to know the person that you're documenting, and it's an interesting relationship. I mean, I love it because I never would have gotten to have this relationship with this guy who's a really amazing man and musician and very smart and just has had a really really rough time the past few months.
Well, it does raise questions, though, Annie, especially at this tender stage in your career and your development, when you take a look at D.C. Williams. What if you had discovered something awful about this guy's life? Everybody's celebrating this man. You come to love him, and then in the process find out if you had found something awful. What would you have to do?
Well, I think just from a journalistic perspective, if we're going to say that doing audio documentary, there's an air of journalism to it, I think I would have to include that in some way. It's all about, for me, it was all about telling a story. And if that had been part of his story, I just would have had to find a way to include it. Maybe there was a way to balance it to show that, you know, people aren't perfect, but...
Yeah. John Bewin, talk a little bit about that, because I know there's a robust discussion about a difference between what a documentary does and what a journalist does. Do you feel there's a difference, that there can be a difference, that documentaries can go off and be something that journalism doesn't have to be, or vice versa?
I do. To me, there's a big overlap, and for me, especially, I guess, in my own work, I've tended to do sort of what you might call journalistic documentary work. So it's, to me, I'm most of the time I'm up to both at the same time. But I do think that, and people would argue that there are things that get called documentaries that don't necessarily stick to the same kind of, at least perceived conventions about objectivity or balance or fairness or whatever term you want to use. That it can be a somewhat more subjective process, and it's always this interaction, these sort of poles of subjective, objective, you know, art, a work of art versus a work of journalism, and people, you know, people work at very different places along those spectrums.
Let me ask you, Bree, if you think there are deficiencies in journalism as it's practiced today, deficiencies in the sense that maybe the whole story doesn't get told in this sort of fiction that we call objectivity.
Yeah, I, that's very interesting to me, because I think that there are a lot of stories within a story and a lot of different ways to tell a story. And what's attractive to me about making documentaries rather than just doing a news piece on, you know, I had read news pieces about this housekeeper, Johnny Hudson, but I didn't know who he was. And I feel like once you delve deeper into one of those facts that you might read in a news story, you see much more the complexity of the problems and the issues, and you can see how this one example of a person can sort of have universal themes, and you can apply this person to sort of larger issues about, like in this case, labor, and how we treat, you know, blue-collar employees in academic situations, and how we just think of work in this country. So I think it's a different way to, and maybe a more moving way to approach some larger issues.
John Bewin, are you surprised at some of the things that your students came up with?
Well, yes. I mean, just in the sense that you're always surprised when we start pointing our microphones out at the world. It's just repeatedly amazing to me. The kinds of things that happen. I mean, in Bria's case, and we haven't gotten into this, Johnny wound up having a medical situation because he wasn't covered by medical insurance after he lost his job. He literally lost his leg after getting an infection that wasn't treated because he didn't have medical coverage. And this was during the time. I mean, Bria, she was in the process of following his story, and absolutely, you know, it always just reminds you of that when you start going out into the world, things happen that you just can't believe.
And this case, Johnny's case, did come to the attention, as you said. There was a group that rallied around Johnny, and you managed to get some of that tape as well. Let's listen.
In some senses, it's not that we chose to take on Johnny's case, it's that Johnny's case found us. A lot of employees get fired in their probationary periods or as contract employees, and they don't see hope that they can get their jobs back. They don't want to deal with Duke anymore. They don't know that they can fight for their jobs. And Johnny did, and he was willing. He's also an incredible Democratic organizer and leader, so he inspired us, as we found out throughout our meetings. So that was one thing. And then another really important reason for working on his case was that we see his case as manifestations of deeper problems at Duke. And two of those are the problem of due process for probationary employees. A lot of employees in their first 90 days have no rights to legal recourse, no rights to due process. That's a system that we saw as deeply broken. And so in organizing around Johnny's case, we want to organize around that broader issue. And also, you know, Johnny and then other housekeepers at Duke Athletics told us stories about management and supervising practices there that we thought were pretty harmful. A lot of arbitrary treatment, disciplinary punishment. We wanted to, in relationship to his case, organize around better management and supervising practices on campus.
All right, Bria, and tell us who that was.
That's Laura. She's an organizer for Duke Organizing.
So it's interesting. At some level, this you can imagine, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, John, you and I are old enough, well, I'll say 30 years ago, this case would never have gotten anybody's attention, not yours and certainly not a group on campus. So to a certain extent, things are changing, perhaps because of groups like this, where documentaries are done, and people's voices that had been submerged for a long time are now heard. Question is, though, how has this been resolved? Do you know, where is it today? Do you know
right now, I think that the administration has agreed to meet with Duke Organizing about negotiating on the due process system, although nothing's been decided, and I think there needs to be a lot more pressure on that issue. And as for Johnny lost his leg, and he has a prosthetic leg. He's doing pretty well, and he's been negotiating with the union to get a desk job at Duke. So that's...
I want to ask you if anything has changed, any of your ideas about the assignment itself. You went in to talk to people who we didn't know much about. You did. How have you changed, Annie?
You know, honestly, when I first heard what our topic was going to be, this is my second course with John, last time we got to really pick, and I was like, oh no, we're all going to come back with the same story. I don't really want to talk to service employees. I don't, you know, I kind of feel odd about that. And as soon as I started delving into this and going to people's houses, going into, you know, downtown Durham and going, I met his pastor and everyone, and I think, I mean, It's crossing a boundary I've never crossed before. And just, I look around my dorm now and I say hello to the housekeepers, and I'm much more aware of service employees and much more aware that they're, you know, someone else. They're like, Coach K, this guy is someone's father, he says in my documentary piece. Everyone has a story. It's all important, and you can only become better having learned that person's story.
How about you, Bria? What's changed for you?
Well, it's interesting to think about work and the divisions of work and to talk about it, I think. And so I had an opportunity over the past few months to really think about like what jobs we value and what jobs, you know, in general we don't, and how some jobs are more protected than others. And so I had a really good example of a person who does really hard work every day, who just, his job wasn't as valued, and he wasn't as valued as much, and didn't have health insurance. And that was an important lesson to see.
John, it sounds like rather than broadcast these documentaries, we ought to just send people out and do them if we want to see some change.
Well, and I do think, especially what Annie just said, I'd like to just sort of use that clip as an advertisement for what we do at the center. But I think, you know, and what struck me, what it seemed like... in general, what the students wanted to do was to complicate the picture and to say, and particularly with the lacrosse situation, the national press, there's been this picture of a rich white Duke and a poor black Durham. And what these stories did was to blur those lines and to complicate them and to say that the university and the city are more interesting than that.
John Bewin, audio program director of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke, thank you very much. Bria Dolnick and Annie Fleischman, thank you as well. Just ahead, something for the kids on Mother's Day, the music of Justin Roberts. Stay with us on The State of Things.